This was the Winter is Coming edition of AEW Dynamite. We get it every year. And Winter was a pretty solid show overall, with a main event of Samoa Joe defending the AEW World Championship against Eddie Kingston. I like Eddie Kingston. Eddie Kingston has not been back for very long. It's only been a few months. But this was the biggest match since Kingston came back from the injury layoff. And he challenged Samoa Joe for the title. I didn't come into the show with any expectation he was actually going to walk out with the championship, which he did not do. But what we got between them, maybe the most surprising part about the match, isn't even so much anything they did in the match. The match pretty much was exactly what I thought it would be. But Samoa Joe retains the AEW World Championship fair and square, and he gets Eddie Kingston to tap out. We may have gotten a preview of Saturday night's main event tonight with John Cena and Gunther. Hook got ejected from the match very early on. We didn't see the ops for the rest of the match. There was no cheating. There was no, nefarious tactics. And now it's on to World's End, where it looks like we are heading for yet another match between Joe and Hangman for the AEW World Championship, which it seemed that way coming into the show. And that was the most surprising part to me. I would say, pleasantly surprised that we didn't get the usual round of interference. It was kind of refreshing. But it also made for kind of a flat ending to the show. Taps out Eddie, who everybody loves, or at least in the crowd tonight, everybody loved. And then the show just ended. So a little bit of a flat ending there. But the show, I think, opened and ended in the same way, where we had a solid opener and we had a solid closer. The opening match was for the AEW Women's World Tag Team titles. We've had this tournament going on now for many, many weeks. We now officially have new AEW Women's Tag Team Champions. It is the Babes of Wrath, Willow Nightingale, Harley Cameron. Yes, Harley Cameron now has a championship for the first time here in AEW. But it was what was in the middle of the show that made this show stand out. Because we had two matches in the Continental Classic tonight, both in the Gold League. And there was a match tonight between Kyle Fletcher and Speedball Mike Bailey. Speedball Mike Bailey came into this show with no points. Kyle Fletcher was at the top of the leaderboard. These two went out there for roughly 20 minutes and tore the house down. Had a great fucking match. Easily the best match of the tournament so far. With Speedball pulling off the upset and getting a win that even he was shocked by. But it was just an excellent back and forth match. The kind of match where nobody really loses. I mean, Kyle Fletcher lost and yeah, that'll be part of his story now going forward, how shocked he was. But nobody really loses in a match like this. Speedball looked great. Fletcher goes into 2026 now. As big of a year as he had, 2026 should be even bigger for him if they play their cards right. And this is the kind of thing that, you know, I look forward to when we have this tournament roll around this time of year. I know it's not everyone's thing, and some people tune out when the Continental Classic comes around just like they would. You know, when we were getting a lot of the inter-promotional stuff going into Forbidden Door, you know, maybe they're not really a fan of it. But for me, I look for these types of matches, you know, in this tournament. And to me, this was the first one that really stood out as, wow, okay, this is what the Continental Classic is all about. So that really made the show for me. The rest of the show was just kind of there. It wasn't bad. It wasn't great. But the opener, the closer, and then that match in the middle is what really made the show for me tonight. Again, we'll get into what happened in the other Gold League match. One thing I am not a fan of, and we are heading for this next week, 3 hours of Dynamite and Collision next week. But on the show next week, we are getting, now stop me if you've heard this before, we are getting a $1 million trios match involving Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against the Don Callis family. No, you are not imagining things. You are not having a case of deja vu. This is reality here is what this is. Actually, I guess you are having deja vu. But that's what we're getting on the show next week. We're going right back to this shit. All over again. Another $1 million trios match with a lot of the same faces that we saw the first time. So that's what you have to look forward to on the Holiday Bash episode next week. But I'm getting... Oh, hold on a second. I'm getting word... in my ear. I'm getting some breaking news here. I can't believe this, but ladies and gentlemen, I'm being told that Mr. Met has officially signed with the LA Dodgers. Mr. Met, this has been a terrible week for the New York Mets, and I'm not really surprised by this. I'm really not. I was already halfway deep in the bottle earlier this evening. Mr. Met is now officially a Dodger. So I wanted to break in with that bit of news here. Kind of appropriate, I think, as a way to close out this Wednesday. Look at him in those colors. This is sacrilegious. I never liked this guy. I never trusted him. I knew one day that something like this would happen. Prick. It's been one of those days. This is your Winter is Coming Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, December 10th, 2025. I'm a very sad Solemn Monster, but we must soldier on here. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open. Oh, man, I got to turn this frown upside down here. We got to find a way to turn this frown upside down. We'll try to do that here as best we can. Start from the beginning of the show here. They opened Winter is Coming with the finals of the AEW Women's Tag Team Championship Tournament with Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron, the Babes of Wrath, taking on Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa, the Timeless Love Bombs. After last week's holiday death match, they had that hardcore holiday death match last week. Excalibur questioned if the Love Bombs were going to be 100% here going into this match here tonight. Willow and Harley, they maintained the advantage during an early commercial break. Toni and Mina, they started their comeback after the show came back, just in the nick of time. Mina wrenched on Harley's knee before applying a figure four, and Harley reversed the pressure, and then both Toni and Willow got involved. Willow placed Toni in an Indian deathlock, and eventually Mina and Willow, they released their respective holds. Mina managed a DDT to Harley, and then Toni hit Storm Zero. So Willow was forced to break up the pin at the last second. Then they ended up out on the floor. Toni Storm went for a tornado DDT off the apron, and Willow stuffed the attempt and ended up dropping her with a suplex on the floor. And so as we headed into the finish here, that left Mina and Harley alone in the ring. Mina delivered a spinning back fist. She went for the glorious driver. Harley, though, countered onto her feet. She basically went up and over, landed on her feet, and delivered a reverse neck breaker, or as Toni Schiavone called it, because this is what Harley Cameron calls it, her finishing move. And that is indeed her finishing move. So at that point, she made a desperate tag to Willow, who entered and delivered a doctor bomb, and that's all it took. Mina Shirakawa takes the losing fall, and just like that, the Babes of Wrath are your very first. Mark it down. This is a historic moment here. Willow Nightingale and Harley Cameron are the brand new AEW Women's Tag Team Champion. Barry is being, he's being a smartass. In the chat, he says, Solomons are dressed for dressed for beach bash, but winter is coming. Hey, very warm in here. Got the thermostat up. What do you want me to do? I'm not going to be sweating my balls off if I wear my sweater here during the stream. It is chilly, though, on the stream. You see the snowfall? Got the icicles forming here on top. You know, you got to look, if you're going to do a theme show, okay, like winter is coming, you know, one of the things I'm pretty good at here on these streams is leaning into these themes. Okay, when we had the beach break episode of Dynamite, do you remember how we opened that up? You could hear the seagulls in the background. I had my AEW tank top on. I got my towel around my neck. I was ready to hit the beach. So for winter is coming, I mean, the aesthetic has to fit. Can't just be any old stream. But yes, I don't know if I'm dressed for a frat party or for beach bash, but nevertheless, we have new tag team champions. And after the match was over, Renee got in the ring. She interviewed the new champions. Willow said that it was a tough year for her, not knowing who she could trust. Harley said that she had her second ever match with Willow and was incredibly honored to be her partner. Toni and Mina then got back up. So we had a little bit of a tense moment because we didn't know what they were going to do. But they ended up sharing hugs and handshakes. And then they shot off some pyro over by the stage. And it is true, Harley Cameron in her very, it was her second ever match, but her very first AEW match 3 years ago on Dark wrestled Willow Nightingale. And now Willow is her tag team championship partner. So a lot has happened in 3 years for Harley Cameron. I thought it was a solid opener. I was expecting a little bit more, just given who was involved here and also the fact that it was the finals. So I don't know. I think I was just expecting more out of this match. As it was, I thought it was solid. I thought it was fine. Tony and Mina were my pick to win the tournament. I stuck with them. I said last week, though, this could go either way, and I would not mind either outcome. You know, you have two babyface teams here. The crowd was pretty evenly behind both of them, you know, going back and forth. My mindset on this was Tony and Mina have lost their respective titles, right? They have nothing. They have nothing but each other. I would put the belts on a team where, you know, you have Toni Storm, who is one of, if not the biggest star in that entire division, and one of the biggest stars in the entire company. So you establish the titles by putting them on Tony and Mina for a little bit, and they don't have to have them for too long. And then you transition those titles over to a team like Willow and Harley, or maybe a heel team, maybe, you know, the members of the Triangle of Madness or something, and let maybe Willow and Harley chase for a little bit before they ultimately win the belts. They went a different way with it. And you know what? That's fine. The only thing that matters now is that, okay, the tournament is over. The novelty now has worn off. We now have women's tag team champions for the first time. What are you going to do with them now? Right? That's the question. When there's no tournament, which guarantees a certain number of matches every week, now where do you go with Willow and Harley? Where do you go with these women's tag team titles? Because they clearly have other women's teams, but you now have to, you know, build stories out around them and start building up whoever the next set of challengers are going to be. That's going to be the key here. Otherwise, this was just a pointless exercise. So hopefully they'll have that story ready to go, but congratulations to Willow and Harley. Very likable. Fans love them. Harley has worked hard to try to improve. So we'll see where they go with this. The Ops were backstage with Samoa Joe congratulating Eddie Kingston for his time finally coming tonight. You wanted the real Samoa Joe, the Crusader of the Independence, not realizing that that man has been standing in front of you all along. The man that Eddie looked up to was a wonderful idea, but the one who will kick his ass tonight is the man who will show him the reality of what this industry really is. Elsewhere backstage, Jon Moxley said that it was his back against the wall here in this Continental Classic. He said that what he has proven over and over again is that no matter how much sand is left in the hourglass, he can still score. So go ahead and count him out. And he called them the hungriest group of men in wrestling today, that being the Death Riders. Daniel Garcia chimed in. He said that they wake up every day and they choose to win. That's what he said. I mean, maybe the other members do, but it's hard for me to really make a list of, you know, recent notable wins that Daniel Garcia has had. So maybe he's referring to the rest of the Death Riders, not so much him and Wheeler Yuta, but maybe Claudio and Pac, who of course beat Darby Allin at Full Gear, Jon Moxley, who's lost a lot of matches this year, but he certainly won more than Daniel Garcia has. So perhaps that's who he was referring to. But he said that's why they are the hungriest and most dangerous group of men in wrestling today. We had our first of two Gold League matches tonight in the Continental Classic. Not even the best of the two. Still a good match, but this was not even the best that we got tonight. With Jack Perry, who was replacing the injured Darby Allin, who says he feels great, but he understands that AEW is kind of protecting him from himself, so he's cool with it. He'll come back when they say it's okay for him to come back. But in his place, they substituted Jack Perry. This was Jack Perry's first singles match in over a year, because he missed a lot of time. And then when he came back, he was doing the tag thing. So first singles match for this guy in forever. And it comes against Kazuchika Okada, of all people. Perry sent Okada to the floor right away. And then he threw him into the barricade and then into the ring steps. Okada reversed an Irish whip. He sent Perry into the barricade, but he recovered with a drop kick. Back in the ring, Perry landed a diving elbow from the top. Okada took the action, though, back to the outside. He threw Perry hard into the barricade, hard enough that he went flying over the barricade and into the audience. Later on, Perry landed a desperation lariat. He followed up with a German suplex. It was an awkward transition in the corner. Okada responded with an elbow from the top, and then he flashed the middle finger to the crowd, delivered a big drop kick. Perry fired back with a running knee strike a moment later for a close near fall. So he went for the snare trap, which is the submission hold he's used. Okada, though, broke the hold by biting Perry's hand, which actually is not the only time tonight that somebody has been bitten on this show. We actually had three different biting incidents on this show, two in this match alone. Okada went for a tombstone piledriver. Case in point, he went for a tombstone piledriver. Jack Perry is hanging upside down, right? 69. And he bites Okada on the dick. And Okada, of course, screams in horror and he drops Jack Perry. Well, I mean, look, he found a way to escape. That's one way to escape the tombstone. Maybe the Undertaker streak would not have gone on for as long as it did if somebody would have thought about this years ago. And they could have countered out of the tombstone in much the same way that Jack Perry did tonight. Maybe the streak wouldn't have been a thing. I don't know why nobody thought of that before. Perry then got the snare trap applied. And Okada was teasing. He was teasing that he was going to tap out here. The hand started coming down. Then it would come up. Then the hand would go down. Then the hand would come up. Finally, he got to the ropes. He fled the ring. He went to go grab a chair. Perry, though, stopped him. Back in the ring, Okada landed a lariat and then held on to maintain wrist control. Perry escaped and went for another running knee strike, but Okada avoided it, and he delivered one Rainmaker for the win. And that's all she wrote. Yes, little Okada is sore after that, says Barry. Poor Okada. Good match here, but they are really pushing this narrative that, you know, Okada is the greatest tournament wrestler ever. He's the greatest tournament wrestler of all time. And we know that he's not going to be taking many more losses outside of the opening match that he had where he lost to Kyle Fletcher. And maybe in the finals, if hopefully it comes down to him and Takeshita and they don't drag it out for even longer. And then you also keep in mind that Jack Perry was not even originally in this tournament. He's substituting for someone else. You take all of those things together that I just said, and the outcome here was never in doubt. So, I mean, Okada did a good job of teasing that he might tap out in the snare trap, but let's be honest, nobody really expected any other outcome except the one that we had here. So there wasn't exactly a lot of drama here. After the match, Don Callis, who was just inexplicably still allowed at ringside on commentary for these matches, where he really should not be, but he got up from commentary, he gets into the ring, and brings more members of the Callis family down to the ring. I don't know how many of them were there tonight of the 38 members of this family, but there were a bunch of them that he ushered down to ringside. Rocky Romero was one of them. He had the duffel bags full of money that they stole from the Bucks back at Full Gear, the $1 million. Callis tried to convince Perry that he, being Callis, made a bad choice by offering the Young Bucks the money, and he should have given it to Jack instead. He said Perry lacks focus and a team of athletes around him, and he offered him a spot in the Don Callis family. Let's expand this family even more. We will welcome you with open arms, and you can join the family. And he also offered him a signing bonus with money out of the $1 million from the duffel bags. But he demanded an answer right away. He reminded him that he was outnumbered. And Callis said, if you don't answer, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to cut your strings and put you in a chair. Perry said that he had an answer for him. He wasn't going to make him wait. I got an answer for you. He goes, and for the second time tonight, I'm going to be biting off more than I can chew. And I'm like, God, that's like one of those terrible Sidro jokes. Think about what he just said there. I'm going to be biting off more than I can chew. I mean, Okada should be happy, I guess, but what a fucking thing to say here. So then, of course, he starts attacking them, but he's outnumbered. He's outnumbered by like 8-1. So that didn't go too well for him. Out comes Luchasaurus, and he runs out to the ring. I use the word run very loosely. He wasn't running very well. But when he gets to the ring, instead of getting into the ring, he stops. He hesitates. It's like he's surveying the landscape. Meanwhile, his partner is down on the mat being beaten by these men. And you could even see Jack Perry looks up like he's looking at Luchasaurus like, all right, dude, what's going on here? In reality, what happened is the Young Bucks, I think the Young Bucks were like 5 seconds late. But the Young Bucks ambushed the Callis family with chairs from behind, but they had not yet hit the ring. So it looked very weird that Luchasaurus, at first I'm like, wait a minute, is he joining the fucking family? Is he just going to like stop and then let this guy get his ass kicked? But he was waiting for the Bucks to get in. So the Bucks get in the ring and they're attacking with the chairs. They worked them over for a little bit. Then they got Okada down on his knees for a BTE trigger. They grab the duffel bag from Don Callis, and Konosuke Takeshita, who was in the ring, ended up taking a bullet for Callis. He dove in the way to eat a super kick. And then the Bucks stood tall with Jurassic Express and the money. They have the money back now. The Callis family stuff with the money, I mean, I just feel like I've seen so many segments like this in recent weeks. It's like rinse repeat with this shit. This didn't do anything for me. The match, like I said, the match was good. The post-match stuff I could have done without, but they had to do it because it was setting up a match for next week, which we will get to in a little bit. But first, we had a video package for Mercedes Moné. Mercedes did not succeed in her quest to win number 14 at Full Gear. She lost to Chris Statlander. And then she lost her first indie championship. I still look at Ring of Honor as an indie. I guess it's not. When it's owned by a billionaire, you can't really say it's an indie. See, I'm from like the old days of when Ring of Honor was like the preeminent indie in the mid-2000s. It's not like that anymore. But she did lose a championship. She lost the Ring of Honor television title at Final Battle to Red Velvet. So the downfall has begun, although she defended her TBS title on Collision against Layla Gray, and she won. But clearly, she is now on the descent. So the question is, like, as they end the segment, like, what's next for Mercedes? And what I talked about on the podcast on Sunday, I threw a name out there. And right now, she's out. She's hurt. But when she's healthy again, hopefully she'll be back soon, and she's not going to be out for an extended period of time, Queen Aminata. Now, Queen Aminata is someone who kind of came out of nowhere. Know too much about her background. But I started, seeing her popping up on AEW television. And obviously, she's not a name I would have known from WWE or anything like that. And then she had those matches with Tekla. And, I mean, those women were, beating the hell out of each other. And it was pretty good stuff. Aminata has broken out in a way, not fully. Hopefully for her, 2026 will be that year. But she's broken out in that I think a lot more people are aware of her and aware of what she brings to the table. I could see her as someone who really would benefit from taking that TBS championship, being the woman who beat Mercedes for it, number one. And number two, getting a run with it. Because honestly, that's what the TBS title should be for. Right? You've already taken 570 some odd days to establish this championship under Mercedes as, I guess, something special, although honestly, it's kind of been held hostage now for too long. But now get that belt on somebody who can really benefit from it. And I just think she would be someone who would benefit from it. And if, after that you want to transition it to Tekla or someone like that, that's fine. But I just throw that name out there because I think she would be a good candidate. I look at like Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter should be groomed for the world championship. Jamie Hayter should be getting prepped and ready for a program with fucking Chris Statlander. Not the TBS title. Eddie Kingston was backstage with Rene Paquette. Said that he is nervous about tonight, which is good. Keeps you on your toes. He brought up today being the 50th anniversary of Terry Funk winning the world championship. I assume he means for the first time. And he hopes that he can make Terry proud. He hopes he can make his parents proud. He says, oh man, I can't get emotional. He said that he doesn't know how many shots he's going to get tells Samoa Joe that he's going to have to put him down because there's no way he's going to quit. Well, he's just a liar, isn't he? I don't know. Makes you wonder now about John Cena this weekend. John Cena's been going around for 20 years saying, never give up. Never give up. Now I'm seeing these rumors that he's going to open the show on Saturday, which is complete bullshit. And pretty much foreshadows the finish of that match, if that's the case. I don't know. You got a lot of people saying, I'll never quit. I'll never quit. And then they turn around and they quit. Tony Schiavone was in the ring, introduced the new TNT champion, Mark Briscoe, down to the ring. And Briscoe said that not long ago, certain individuals said that he would never win gold. He would never win the big one. But look at the shiny hardware he has now. The doubters are still out there, but respectfully, Briscoe says they can kiss his big white ass. And that started chants of big white ass from the crowd. How long before they put that on a t-shirt? Who would walk around wearing a shirt like that, by the way? I mean, there are wrestling fans who would wear it, I'm sure. I mean, many years ago, the APA had a shirt that on the back said, always pounding ass. And there were people who bought that shirt. There were probably teenagers who wore that shirt to school. Imagine you're walking around your school with a shirt that on the back says, always pounding ass. That was the attitude era. That was the attitude era for you. It wasn't all great. Today's episode is sponsored by Hims. You know, men deal with hair loss every day. Millions of them. If you're one of those people, you may be able to relate to this. You may do all kinds of things to try to hide it because you're very self-conscious about it. You may wear a hat. You may wear a hairpiece. You may actively avoid certain social situations. You shouldn't have to rearrange your life just to deal with hair loss. Hims makes expert care accessible on your schedule so you can focus on feeling like yourself again. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work, including chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. Doctor-trusted ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil can stop further hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. You shouldn't have to go out of your way just to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. No hidden fees, no surprise costs, just real personalized care on your schedule. Think of Hims as your digital front door that you walk through to transport you back to your old self. With simple 100% online access to trusted treatments for real health concerns, all in one place. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/solomonster. That's hims.com/solomonster for your free online visit. hims.com/solomonster. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Featured products include compounded drug products, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. Anyway, he got cut off here by a whiny little voice that was detached from a body. We could hear the voice. We couldn't see who it was at first. And actually, on commentary, I think it might have been Tony Schiavone who said that, mentioned that he heard like a whiny voice. And I'm listening. I thought it was Ricochet. You say whiny voice, I think Ricochet. It wasn't Ricochet. Ricochet was not on this show. But it was Wheeler Yuta, Daniel Garcia, and Marina Shafir coming through the crowd on their way to the ring. And Garcia took the mic from Yuta, since he's the one challenging Mark Briscoe for the TNT title this weekend on Collision. He said he feels bad for Briscoe, as everything about him is sad. Garcia said that it'll be even sadder when Briscoe has to try to provide for his family without the TNT title and a broken leg. Briscoe said Garcia is getting an ass-kicking on Saturday, but it would be rude to deprive the crowd tonight of one as well. And he told Garcia to make his move. Garcia started slapping and face-washing him, so Briscoe dropped Garcia, who had to then be restrained by Wheeler Yuta and Marina Shafir, and they took him out of the ring. That was it. That was the entire segment. This was a very lame ending to an otherwise very ho-hum, very pedestrian segment. They wanted to get Mark Briscoe on the show to say a few words to hype up the title match for Saturday. This didn't do anything for me. But then Excalibur said, wait a minute, there's a situation developing backstage. And they cut backstage. We see Tekla and Julia Hart and Sky Blue. They are beating up some random women who I could not identify until Chris Statlander made the save, hit Sky Blue and Julia with a chair. Tekla, though, was able to dodge the shot and she bailed. And that was it. That was the only appearance by the women's world champion here on this show tonight. Then we had a tornado tag team match. A rare tag team of Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland taking on the Ops, Powerhouse Hobbs, Katsuyori Shibata. Hangman and Swerve, they entered through the crowd. They had chains around their necks. Swerve had a staple gun. Shibata then ordered the random Ops dojo geeks who came down to the ring with them to go into the crowd and attack. So they all went into the crowd. They all got destroyed by Hangman and Swerve with the chains and the staple gun. Shibata then got into the crowd. He got a hold of the staple gun somehow, but then he accidentally stapled one of the dojo dorks right in the forehead. And we got a split screen because there was chaos in different parts of the arena. You had Hangman over here. You had Swerve over there. And the match was not officially underway. The bell had not rung. They had not hit the ring yet. Page put Hobbs through a table with a Death Valley driver before having a beer, drinking on the job, a terrible influence. Shibata, meanwhile, placed Strickland sitting on a chair, got a running head start, and then hit him with a running drop kick. Not even a drop kick, hit him with a running kick, and booted him off the chair as the brawl went to commercial. They came back from the break, and the bell finally rings. Like 7 or 8 minutes had already gone by. Now the match can officially, it's like fucking War Games, right? Now the match can begin. Now the match beyond has begun. The referee took the chair, though, away from Hangman. I'm like, wait a minute. It's a tornado tag team match. What are you taking the chair away from him for? And then on commentary, Excalibur mentions that despite this being a tornado tag team match, disqualifications do count. Which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever because we've seen tornado tag team matches on this show that are frequently, if not always, no disqualification. So for whatever reason, unless he misspoke, which clearly he didn't because the referee took the weapon away, this tornado tag team match is in fact not a no disqualification match for reasons that are very bizarre. But it'll be even more bizarre here in a minute. So Shibata and Hobbs, they worked over Hangman. Strickland was nowhere to be found. Prince Nana, whose job it is to dance, he jumped up on the apron and was about to get beaten up by Powerhouse Hobbs until Swerve flew into the camera shot out of nowhere on the apron with a big boot. Later on, Strickland wanted a house call kick. He got pulled outside, though, by Hobbs. Page missed the buckshot lariat on Shibata, who got a low blow after Hobbs distracted the referee. And this is where Tony Schiavone said, well, anything goes. And I'm like, what? What do you mean anything goes? We just had Excalibur on commentary say that there are disqualifications in this match. Now we have Tony Schiavone saying, well, anything goes in a match like these people don't know what they're doing. They don't. One hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing. It was comical. Ridiculous. They have absolutely no idea what they're doing. With Shibata applying a cross arm breaker on Page, Strickland flew off the top with a swerve stomp to break it. Now all four men are slugging it out until Strickland and Page, they sidestepped Hobbs, who mowed down Shibata. Double rolling elbows from the babyfaces as they hit a fallaway slam 450 splash combo before Strickland nailed a rolling cutter on Hobbs and then left Strickland and Page face to face. They had a little stare down. Hobbs got double power bombed. He got double teamed. He was on the apron, so basically they just grabbed him in a powerbomb position, like the Shield powerbomb, and they put him through a table at ringside that was, for whatever reason, right in front of the announce desk. So not through the announce desk, but through the table in front of the announce desk. And at that point, buckshot lariat, House call kick. Shibata goes down. Swerve gets the pin. After the match, we see Josh Alexander. He's watching from backstage. It looked like he was bleeding on his bald head over there. I don't know what that was from, but Alexander was watching on from the back because he's going to be wrestling Swerve on Collision on Saturday, which, for those of you who will watch Collision, it is an earlier start time, 4:30 Eastern time. They don't want to go head-to-head with Saturday night's main event. So Saturday night's main event, I believe, has a 7 Eastern start. I thought it was 8. For some reason, I think it might be 7. Somebody double-check that for me. So I thought it was a 7 p.m. start. But anyway, just be aware. Collision is going on at 4:30 on Saturday. Bryan Danielson did have a great line here, though, on commentary when he said, "How can winter be coming when hell has already frozen over with these two men teaming?" Referring to Hangman and Swerve. I thought that was a good line. It was fun seeing them team up, and they were super over. I mean, Hangman and Swerve looked like a couple of badasses in the crowd, just beating up all the geeks that would come at them one by one. But otherwise, it was the usual plunder garbage match that we see every single week on this show. You get at least one of them every single week. Tables and glass and staple guns and all kinds of bullshit. That's what this match was. At least no one bled. Unless you count that little bit of what looked like blood on Josh Alexander's head as he was standing in the back. It's kind of funny, though. Like, he wasn't even in the match. And it looked like he was the only one bleeding. So at least we didn't have that. If you factor everything that happened before the bell even rang, this went almost 20 minutes. Without that, the match itself was only maybe about 7 or 8. All right, so it's at 8 p.m. start time for Saturday night's main event. Thank you. I wasn't sure. I had to double check that because for some reason I was thinking 7. I think they may have mentioned a pre-show of some kind on Monday night. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Elsewhere in the back, Don Callis, he demanded his money back from the Young Bucks, and he told them that he could take them to court. This was just Callis, by the way. He was not in the room with the Bucks. He didn't even have any of the other family members with him. It was him and a camera. And he was threatening, I could take you to court and get that money back, but I would prefer to get my pound of flesh. And then he issued a challenge. Stop me if you've heard this before. He issued a challenge for a trios match against the Young Bucks and a partner of their choosing for the $1 million. Yes, they are doing the same exact shit that they already did at Full Gear, the big $1 million match, and literally the same money, like the money the Bucks stole or stole back from them. They're running this back. And later on in the back, the Bucks approach the Dinosaur and ask him to be their partner. So now they're giving the Dinosaur a chance to win his cut of $1 million. And he grunts no. Now, he doesn't actually speak, but he basically said no. And then he pointed, and the camera pans over, and we see the sign Kenny Omega on the locker room door. This man sacrificed. Well, I mean, I guess what would a Dinosaur do with money, I guess, right? If we're supposed to believe that he's from 66 million years ago. But this man willingly gave up his portion of $1 million to say, no, I think Kenny Omega, who makes more money than I'm sure Luchasaurus does, no, go to him. He could use it. So they walk over to Omega's locker room. They knock on the door. He opens the door. They say, hey, you want to run it back one more time? We got the money on the line. And Kenny says, I don't want the money. I would fight Don Callis and the Callis family for free. So I accept. And next week in Manchester, England on Dynamite, it's going to be Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks against the Don Callis family for $1 million. I could not believe this. I could not believe that they were running back the same match a second time with the stupid money stipulation. Like, who could possibly care? Like, it's just, it's unbelievable. Now, the Callis family members, we found out later, are going to be Okada, Takeshita, and Hechicero. So I'm sure, obviously, they're going to do something with Okada and Takeshita, as they've been doing multiple times now for many, many weeks. They don't get along. that will be the more intriguing part of this match to me, if there is anything intriguing about this match. I mean, look, we're getting Okada and Omega in the same match, but I'm just like, the whole concept of this and running it back for a second time with the dumb money stuff, like, why do we keep doing this? Like, are we really doing this again? But their plan for Kenny Omega is to just keep him in these trios matches. They clearly either do not want him stressing himself out physically in a singles, like a taxing singles match, or maybe it's something that he himself has requested. I don't know. But this is almost exclusively what he's been relegated to for the last few months, it feels like. In the other Gold League Continental Classic match on this show, we had Kyle Fletcher, who sits atop the league. I think he's tied with 6 points, taking on Speedball Mike Bailey, who came into this match with no points. Renee was at ringside as all the introductions were going on, said that this is do or die for Mike Bailey tonight. I want you to know that Mike Bailey was, he's only 0-1 coming into this match. He's 0-1. Like, is it really do or die? It's like when the Mets start their season in 2026 and they lose their first 15 games, it'd be like the announcer saying, oh, this next game is do or die. Game number 16 here in this 162-game season. This could decide the entire season. I mean, it kind of feels like the season's already over, in all honesty, but let's not cut this guy's legs out from under him just yet. Okay, he's only 0-1. He could still come back here. The other thing also was, I don't know how many of you caught it, probably next to none of you, but earlier today on his Twitter, and I think AEW shared it, there was a social media video of Speedball backstage. He was throwing some kicks, you know, shadow kicks, and he's getting ready for his match. And who walks in? Ernest the Cat Miller and Glacier. Not in his Glacier costume. I mean, that would be fucking funny if it was. Actually, you know what? What a huge missed opportunity here. Fucking winter is coming. How do you not have Glacier on the show? See, the thing, though, with the Continental Classic is that you're not allowed to have anybody at ringside. Otherwise, I would have had Glacier in, like, the full costume. He would have been out there rooting him on, cheering this guy on. Perfect time. But anyway, they walk up to Speedball in the back and they're giving him words of encouragement. I'm like, talk about a random cameo. It's like, okay. You know what's funny about that? I'm pretty sure that Ernest Miller, I don't remember if Glacier was there, but I'm almost positive that the Cat was part of Goldberg's entourage. As he was coming out, like, they were backstage with him. But as he was getting ready to come out for his final match against Gunther, I'm pretty sure Ernest Miller was part of his crew. So how about that? Jumping back and forth between WWE and AEW. That's right, Glacier. Glacier and the Cat. So Bailey got off to a good start, and Fletcher bailed out to the floor to regroup. After coming back into the ring, Fletcher took control, had some heavy strikes, stomps. Bailey fired back with a top rope crossbody. Fletcher, though, caught him out of midair, drove him into the mat with a backbreaker and a uranage back-to-back. Bailey, though, fired back with a series of kicks. He whiffed on a shooting star press, and then he low-bridged Fletcher to the floor. He followed up with a springboard tornillo. Both men ended up on top of the barricade outside, and Fletcher picks up Bailey in a body slam position. And as Fletcher himself, right, is coming off the barricade, he slams Speedball. And his lower back clips the edge. It clips the top of the barricade as he splats on the floor. And then they go to a commercial break. Come back. Both men now are on the apron. And Bailey delivers a standing double knee drop on Fletcher. Speedball delivered a Hurricane Rana after this from the top rope. But Fletcher got his feet up then on the follow-up shooting star press. Kyle followed that by tossing Bailey like a lawn dart into the corner and then hit basically a last ride powerbomb, sit out powerbomb for a near fall. After they got to their feet, they had a chop battle that turned into a kick battle After a series of reversals, back and forth they go. Bayley got a close near fall after a powerbomb reversal into a Rana. Bayley got another near fall after a head kick, and then he delivered the time adventure kick. And on that, he got the closest of near falls. They traded kicks back and forth. Bayley got the better of it. He delivered the ultimate weapon, and Fletcher was on his hands and knees, so he did it to the back. And Fletcher was able to kick out, though, after this. And crowd was fully into this. He went for another ultimate weapon on the floor outside, but he came up with nothing but his knees smacking the ground. And I winced. They're not even my knees, but I felt every bit of that. So back in the ring, Fletcher delivered a brainbuster, which is his finish. Bayley kicked out. Crowd can't believe it. Fletcher can't believe it. So after another series of reversals, Fletcher hit a wild lariat as Bayley ended up getting a cross-arm sunset flip with the arm and the legs trapped, and he got the flash pin to shock the world, and it sure shocked Kyle Fletcher based on the look on his face. And everybody went nuts for the finish. Kevin Knight runs out, his tag team partner who's also in this tournament. He ran out to ringside to check on his partner and celebrate the win with him, and Fletcher was just left stunned. Wow. What a sprint that these two had there towards the end. The time call. Like, literally right when the finish was going down, Justin Roberts had just announced over the PA system that we had 1 minute left in this match. And I'm like, all right, are we getting a draw? Is that what we're getting here? Our first draw? Or are they going to do the thing where it's like down to the final 2 seconds? It's like, no. He announced there was a minute left in the match. And Bayley had already gone for the pinning combination, and he got the 1-2-3. So with a minute left in this match, he picks up the win. I like the way they did that. This was a fantastic match. Were there a lot of near falls near the end? Yes, there were. Yes, there were. But this was just an outstanding match. Bayley gets on the board with 3 points, and Fletcher is still obviously sitting in pretty good position right now with those 6 points. Look, Fletcher, and if you've watched his work this year, against everybody from Omega to Hangman and the matches he's had in this tournament, he won the TNT title. He's had a breakout year. You know, the guy's a stud in that ring. 2025 for him as a singles competitor was a breakout year. 2026 should be the year where he puts it all together. And I'm not going to say that he's going to be a world champion next year, but he should be in an even bigger and better position than the one he's in now. It should just be escalating for him from here on out, because he is one of those guys, those young stars, where they really did make a star, you know? And it's funny. As I was putting my notes together, I noticed there's one YouTube channel that I follow. It's called The Normies. I think they have almost 1 million subs. And it's like a group of, they review movies and TV shows. It's like a reaction channel. And some of the girls on the channel in recent months have started reviewing and reacting to wrestling stuff. Like, they're big into WWE. And then I guess somebody put them on to the Toni Storm Mariah May feud. So they did a few videos, you know, watching their program. And I just noticed they put a video up like 3 hours ago about Kyle Fletcher, like some of Kyle Fletcher's matches, but I noticed he's in the thumbnail. I'm like, wait a minute. Because usually it's them just sitting on a couch, right? And they're watching. And I click on the video. He's in the fucking house wherever they are. They obviously invited him in. He's sitting on the couch with them. I'll have to check that out tomorrow. So apparently now they're big Kyle Fletcher fans. He should be winning over some more fans in 2026, right? Higher and higher and higher up the ladder is where he should be going. Speedball's great. Fletcher's great. So you end up with a great match. I will say that I did go ahead and I put this match on my list because I keep a running list of my favorite matches of the year for the end of the year countdown that I'll be working on. I don't know if it'll end up on the final list, but I did just go ahead and put this match on that list. I don't do that with just any match. This match I put on that list. This was excellent stuff. Easily the highlight of the, not just the night, but the highlight of the entire tournament so far, at least until we get to World's End. Now backstage, Hangman Page was with Renee, and he addressed Samoa Joe. And he told him that he would be watching the main event tonight. He said, no matter who won tonight, whether it's Joe or whether it's Eddie Kingston. At World's End, he was coming for his AEW World Championship. And then we had our main event, Samoa Joe. Yeah, there have been some big Winter is Coming shows over the years in this company. It's so weird when I think back to like those 2020, like late 2020 shows. Think back to the one, I think the one in 2020 is when Sting debuted. And they were running all those shows out of Daly's Place. I think back to that, and it's weird how it just puts me in a different, like, headspace. I don't know. It's weird. Like, I don't want to say the good old days of AEW, because I don't look at any of the empty arena shit as the good old days. But it's kind of like the early days of doing the AEW reviews on the channel. And I'll sometimes go back and look at some of the old videos, and it's just, I don't know. Just has a different feeling to it. But there have been some big Winter is Coming shows. Sting's debut. We had Kenny Omega. Didn't Kenny Omega beat Moxley, I think, on one of them for the world title? There was a Bryan Danielson Hangman Page match on one. So there have been some big ones before. This will not go down as the biggest one. But we do tend to get some world title defenses, and so we had one tonight. Samoa Joe defending the world championship against Eddie Kingston. Hook came out to the ring with Joe, and Hook immediately tripped up Kingston right in front of the referee, Paul Turner, who ejects him right out of the gate. So Hook is gone. First minute of the match. Joe delivered an overhead belly to belly before lighting up Kingston with jabs. He was picking him apart in the early going. Kingston responded with a running bulldog. We got a slugfest. Kingston won. Joe fired off some stiff shots, though. Kingston wound up with a home run shot and dropped Joe. Eddie charged into the corner. Joe flattened him, though, with the huge ST Joe before delivering a running boot scrape. Dueling chance now. Got Joe chance. We got Eddie chance. Joe starts a strike battle. Still some fight left in Eddie, though. And he hit multiple lariats. Joe did not go down. On the third try, Kingston ran into a snap power slam by Joe for a near fall. So Joe starts throwing kicks and knees. Kingston, though, no-sold him. Both men traded knee strikes and chops. Eddie collapses, only to then catch Joe with an exploder and almost didn't clear the top of Joe's head. He almost dropped him right on his friggin' head. Joe came back with a fireman's carry slam, got the STF applied. Kingston bit his way free, the third time that we've had biting on this show. At least he didn't bite him below the belt, but he bit the hand to bite his way free, and then he spiked Joe with a DDT. Joe rolled to the floor. Kingston got Joe back inside. He lowered the straps, and he wanted the spinning back fist. Joe blocked it, so Eddie hit a cutter instead. And so now Samoa Joe is on spaghetti legs, tried the back fist again, spun right into the coquina clutch, and he took Eddie to the mat. Eddie begins to fade, and before he could pass out, he tapped out. Very light tap, like, you know, like this. Not a furious tap like fucking Gunther to Jey Uso at WrestleMania, but he tapped out. And just like that, clean, fair and square in the middle of the ring, Samoa Joe retains the AEW World Championship. No help from the ops. No cheating. No cheat codes enabled here. No turnbuckles. No nothing. Beat him clean. Eddie came into this match and said, I want the old Samoa Joe. I want the Samoa Joe that was Ring of Honor World Champion for all those days. I want the Samoa Joe that I saw on the independent scene. And the story here is that, as Bryan Danielson said at the end of the show, that's the Samoa Joe he wanted. That's the Samoa Joe that he got. And it was about keeping Joe strong, because now we're going into World's End in a couple of weeks, right? 2.5 weeks, whatever it is. And he's going to be defending clearly that championship against Hangman Page. So that was about getting Joe prepped and ready for that rematch. We had a solid opener, and I felt the same way about the main event. It was not a blowaway match. It was the kind of match I was expecting these two to have. It was a buzzkill in a way, the way they did the finish. I get why they did it, and I can appreciate the lack of interference, which we get enough of, I feel like. It did make for a flat ending, though. But it was a solid match, and if there was one surprise of how things went here, it was just how they did the finish. I was mildly surprised by that. But this was Eddie's biggest match since he came back. Has not been back for very long. I think he should get back, into the thick of things here. I'm sure I'll have a match with a Hook. He could do that match at World's End. You could do Eddie and Hook, you know? I mean, it could end up being a collision match, but you could do that match at World's End, you know, one-on-one. And the question is, will Eddie Kingston at some point end up with the AEW World Championship? Is Tony Khan at some point going to give him the token run with the belt? I say yes. I believe at some point, I'm not prepared to say it's going to be 2026, but I do think at some point there is a story to tell because Eddie is just this beloved figure on the roster. And he's got many more years in AEW. He just made a comment the other day that, you know, when my contract is up, I've got like five or six, I think he said 6 years, or he has a 6-year contract and has 5 years left, something like that. He's got like 6 years left on his contract. And when that expires, I'm going to move to Alaska, mind my own business. As long as I have my streaming and I can watch my Yankees and my Giants and my Rangers and my Knicks, he says, I'll be happy. So Eddie's not going anywhere for a while. I think at some point Tony's going to want to give him that token run. I don't see it being a terribly long thing or anything like that, but I do think at some point we will get Eddie Kingston as the AEW World Champion. I do believe that. I think it's something the fans would enjoy. Just seeing him, even if it's for one night only, you know, just to kind of achieve that moment and reach up and grab that brass ring, I think that's something that we'll get at some point. But now is not that time. So the other question is, where does MJF fit into things here? Because next week on the show, they are doing this Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal gimmick. MJF has held the Dynamite Diamond ring every year for the 6 years they've been doing this gimmick. And I thought that meant, well, okay, good. He hasn't been around, then they're going to save him for when the time is right. And clearly he's not being promoted for anything for World's End, so he doesn't have to be in this, and we can have somebody new holding the diamond ring. And then I thought more about it. I'm like, realistically, are they really going to leave MJF out of the diamond ring nonsense? Probably not. So we're getting a battle royal next week. My guess is he shows up there as a surprise entrant. I think MJF is probably on his way back next week, would be my guess. And then probably going to the finals, and they may put it on him for a 7th year in a row, or 6th year, whatever it is, because they just... That's his gimmick. They can't help themselves, right? He's got to have the diamond ring. But he's got that contract as well. That's why my thought was, like, he doesn't need the ring. If the point is the winner gets the ring and a championship match on January 14th on Dynamite, the man already has a guaranteed title shot in that contract. Like, he doesn't need it. Maybe he goes to the finals after, you know, the last two men of the Battle Royal, they get a match. And then that's how they're doing it. And then the winner of the match gets a title shot. Maybe he goes to that match and then he loses and somebody else gets the ring. But to me, it would be redundant if he just wins and then has a championship match on January 14th. Like, what's the fucking point of that? I mean, I guess he could go and lose and then he still has another title shot banked. But I think that would be very dumb. But I am expecting to see him back. Next week, again, it's 3 hours. So it's Dynamite for 2 hours, and then the third hour will be Collision. They're from Manchester, England. So the UK fans are always very lively. They're very popular over in the UK. I don't know what venue they're running. I would imagine it's a bigger venue than usual, so they may have a lot of people there, but I didn't check to see exactly where they're running. Actually, let me check right now. I'm curious. What building are they running for that show? Let's see. They usually don't have a problem when it comes to filling up these buildings in the UK. Holiday Bash, they are at Co-op Live. What the hell is that? What is Co-op Live? I've never heard of this before. It's an indoor arena in Manchester, England, with a capacity of what? Oh, all right. 23,000. Withstanding 23,000. With seated only 20,000. It's a decent number. They're going to be in a decent sized venue next week. Co-op Live. It's a newer building. Okay, maybe that's why I haven't heard of it before. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You know, in this country, it's illegal in almost every state to drive without car insurance. But that doesn't stop people from doing this very thing every single day. And maybe you fancy yourself a great driver with an impeccable driving record. But you know, there's all kinds of crazy people on the road these days. So why in the world would you ever want to take that risk? That's what going online is like without ExpressVPN. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, whether it's in a hotel, at the airport, or anywhere really, just know that your data is not secure. Any hacker on that same network can easily gain access to and steal your personal data. And let me tell you, that's a pain in the rear end that you don't want to have to deal with. Your data is valuable, too. Hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your personal information on the dark web. I mean, it's called the dark web for a reason. You don't want your data floating around there. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN is the best VPN because it's super secure. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years just to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It's also very easy to use. Just tap one button and you're protected. It also works across all of your devices. Doesn't matter if it's your phone, your laptop, tablet, it works on all of them. And check this, plans start at just $3.49 a month. That works out to just 12 cents a day. I was on the road in Chicago a few weeks ago. I had my ExpressVPN loaded up on my phone at the venue and at the hotel as well. You can never be too safe. My privacy is important, so for me, it's totally worth the very minimal effort involved in keeping my stuff secure. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to find out how you can get up to 4 extra months. expressvpn.com/solomonster. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Winter is Coming? 62% thumbs up for tonight's show, 38% roughly thumbs down. I tell you what, for X, it's a pretty good poll result there for an AEW show. I said it was a solid show tonight. Yeah, nothing blow away or anything, although the Kyle Fletcher and Speedball match was. But the rest of it was pretty solid stuff. Not one of the better Dynamites, but it wasn't a bad show. We got some good action, at least. Let's take a look at your Super Chats. They have 9,000 tickets moved already. Good. Good. They should be able to hit 10 then. That's what they do for usually the U.S. pay-per-views. That's about what they did, I think, for Full Gear. Maybe a little more than that. Again, the sad thing is we don't get very many crowds like that for Dynamite. We just don't. It's still a weakness. If they knew they could fill the bigger venues, they would be running them by now. The fact they're still running a lot of smaller venues tells you that they're not confident that they could sell those tickets yet. And the idea is to get to a point where you can once again start bringing Dynamite out of the doldrums and start bringing it into bigger buildings, you know, and you can light that shit up. It looks great on camera. Get some loud crowds going. That should be the goal. Yeah, that's the Manchester show for next week. They're in Cardiff, Wales for Collision this weekend. And then next week they're in Manchester. And then actually, I think the weekend after that, I know it's the weekend of the House of Glory show is on Friday the 19th. So that weekend, they're taping Dynamite and Collision from the Manhattan Center. It's very interesting because Cody Rhodes had, who was the actor he just had on his podcast? Timothy Clement or whatever his name is. No, Chalamet. Say Clement. Who apparently is a big wrestling fan. And they had a discussion on the podcast about how come, it's totally random that this celebrity is like, yeah, I talked to Triple H about how come you guys don't do a show at the Manhattan Center. I'm like, I've only been asking that question on the podcast for years. But he goes, Triple H was like, yeah, we can't make money in that building. So if you're wondering why WWE doesn't run the Manhattan Center the way that AEW does, because at least in terms of WWE, they can't make any money, which I don't believe, by the way. This is the TKO era. You can't tell me with the ticket prices that they would charge for a Manhattan Center show, like at the Hammerstein, let's say, which is in the same building, that they couldn't make money off that show. But this is apparently what he told Timothy. Can't make money in that building. There's one, and I do know this is true. It's not a great building for TV. There's like one elevator that you have to use to transport all the pieces of equipment that they have. It's not a very TV-friendly building. I still would love to see like an NXT show there. I think they can make money there. Bobby's World with a 10. All due respect to our good friend Jeremy Rose, but when he asked if LA Knight's time to win Money in the Bank had come and gone, my first answer was yes, Rollins won it in June. That's 2 years in a row, by the way, that he was favored by a lot of people to win, and it didn't work out. Imagine any wrestler biting The Undertaker like Jack Perry did to Okada. That poor soul would rest in peace, says dried ribs and chicken with flavor. It's kind of a visual I don't need, you know? Mark Henry upside down in the tombstone, taking a chunk out of The Undertaker's crotch. He'd have to no-sell it, right? It's The Undertaker. He's a guy, he no-sells everything. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury. The Ocean Center in Daytona Beach used to be known for Hogan's heel turn. After tonight, it's the place where Fluff Jr. graduated college. Summa cum laude. Get that. All right. Round of applause for Fluff Jr. Well, I'm sending my congrats out to Fluff Jr. That's awesome. Summa cum laude, man. That's very impressive. I wonder where he got it from. Where did he get all the brains from in the family? Was it Fluff? Was it Mrs. Fluff? Dried Ribs and Chicken says, moment Mercedes loses all of her belts, she won't be Ultimo Monet anymore. Her new nickname will be Naked Monet, Beltless Monet, and Broken Monet. Well, she's already showing signs of Broken Monet. Duff's Vids. Which insect is always in danger of the Pink Panther? Dead ant. Dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant. Dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant, dead ant. You didn't think I was going to get that one, did you? I used to watch the Pink Panther cartoon. I knew exactly what you were doing there. He also said, got arrested yesterday for stealing a kitchen utensils. Misspelled his own super chat. It was a whisk I was willing to take. What do you call an Asian hitman? Chinese takeout. Okay, that's good. I gotta give you credit for that one. Also, what do you call a medieval spy? Surveillance. Surveillance, yes. Okay, all right. Why can't NASA send a duck into outer space? Because the bill would be astronomical. And then we have this crazy SOB, Bobbert Reviews, with a $150 super chat bomb. Bobbert is saying, I'm going to clear the deck here and show you people how it's done. Bobbert, thank you very much. One of our MVPs here, 2025. Bender McSimpson, great match with Fletcher and Speedball. Glad Speedball got the win because the match was leading to it. Well, I mean, it was a win that he needed, I guess. According to Renee, it was do or die, even though he was 0-1 coming into tonight. But he's not going to be doing much more winning in this tournament, I don't think. Tuxedo T-Servo, another week, and I still don't care about Jack Perry. Duff's Vids, how is a push-up bra like a bag of chips? Once you open it, you realize it's half empty. Why was the math book so sad? It has so many unsolved problems. It's true. Why is everyone always thirsting in the North Pole? No well.
Boo.
Boo. I say boo on the likes, too. We're only at 338. Looks like Be the Booker is going to have to wait until Friday at this point. Not looking good. Jeremy Rose with a $15 super chat. MJF wins the title shot in an MJF fashion, announces that he is also using his contract the same night in case he loses. Therefore, he wears out the champion, loses then, instantly starts a new match, and wins. So you think they're going to do a title change on the Maximum Carnage episode of Dynamite in the middle of January? I mean, they could. The thing is, there's sort of a pay-per-view drought after World's End. I don't think they have another show until Revolution, which is, I want to say, March 15th. So between December 27th and March 15th, there are no scheduled pay-per-views. So, I mean, it's possible. Not really expecting it, but it's possible. Oz and Glorious, Solo, if you want to restore the feeling, you'll bring back the pandemic hair and the Hofstra mug. Hit that like button. I still got the Hofstra mug, but it's better to have one with my own logo on it. Free advertising, see? The pandemic hair ain't coming back. The pandemic hair was the product of 16 weeks of no haircut. I am not going to allow that to happen again. Shave my head bald before I do that. Jeremy Rose watched Vault's story of Armageddon Hell in a Cell. Do you think Rikishi's heel run was his best work? I found it entertaining. I mean, you know, whatever. He did the best he could. He was a solid mid-card heel. The thing is, they tried to push him as a main event heel. Rikishi is not a main event heel. He's not. So it might have been the highlight for him. I mean, for him, I'm sure he made more money during that run. He got to work with all the top guys, Rock, Austin, Undertaker. But he stuck out like a sore thumb because he didn't belong there. Rojo Bear 24, Harry Potter is lame. Wizards should use guns instead of wands in the movie. I agree, and chainsaws. Afro Solo was certainly a sight to behold. It was something. It was definitely something. Michael Darcy with the 12. Have you seen Vince Gilligan's new show Pluribus? If so, what do you think of it? Rhea Seahorn is fantastic in it. I'm in the middle of watching it right now, actually. I just saw the episode with John Cena's cameo, which kind of came out of nowhere. Yeah, Rhea Seahorn is great. She was great on Better Call Saul. I'm enjoying it. It's been very, it seems like it's starting to finally pick up a little bit now, but like it was starting to drag for me. But I'm enjoying it. Vince Gilligan is a genius. The master behind Breaking Bad. Jeremy says, buy or sell peak Hulkamania or Attitude Era Stone Cold Steve Austin. I mean, buy or sell in what way? What am I buying and selling? You know, as a kid, it was all about Hulkamania. As a fan who was a little bit older, it was all about Austin. It's hard to prioritize one over the other. Without the Hogan peak, I may not be a fan right now. Then again, without the Austin peak and him getting hot and kind of lifting up that company in the late 90s, there may not be a WWE to speak of. I mean, there probably would be, but where they would be right now without Austin getting hot when he did, I don't know. I don't know that they would be as big as they are today. But if I have to buy or sell on one or the other, I'm going to buy on peak Attitude Era Stone Cold Steve Austin. More. What are your top three Cena matches? I'm gonna talk about Cena on Sunday. I think I may, I don't know if it'll be anything formal. I'll probably get into the matches he's had this year on the retirement tour, and then maybe I'll do like my top like five or something Cena matches. I'll give it some more thought. I just think it's appropriate to, I'm going to be talking about Cena on Sunday anyway. Probably do something like that on the podcast. Because he's had a bunch of great matches. And Oz and Glory is every Wednesday, you doubt us. Hit that like button. Well, I mean, I doubt you because we're still sitting at 357 likes, which means we missed the goal. So I was right. Can't say I was wrong. All right, let me check out the member chats, which unfortunately they don't show up on that list. So I have to go to a different column. I don't know why it has to be that way, but that's YouTube for you. We got Raph, 17 months of channel membership. Thrilled for Speedball and the Babes of Wrath. Per my YouTube recap, I saw 222 of your videos in 2025. Top 2% viewer. Thank you for the great year. On to 2026. I love it. I love it. Top 2%. All the people that were sending me screenshots, top 1%, 2%, top 5 list of like the most watched videos, and it's all sound off content. Love it. I love that shit. Thank you, Raph. Oofman Entertainment with 56 months of membership says, 56 months, baby. So we lost Mr. Met, huh? Says, that's fine. We are keeping Ms. Met. That's right. If you missed the breaking news from earlier, there it is. Mr. Met signs with the Dodgers. We have now lost Edwin Diaz. We have lost Pete Alonso. We have lost Brandon Nimmo. And we have lost Mr. Met. It's like when the Radicals jump from WCW to WWF. It's a sad day. It's a dark day in Mets history. Anyway, this is a big weekend coming up because we do have the farewell. John Cena's final match, Saturday night's main event. Jesse the Body Ventura will be back, apparently, this weekend. I don't know that he'll be calling Cena's match, but that'd be kind of funny if he did. But he'll be on the show. And I don't know. I'm seeing reports now, and I think it comes from Brian Alvarez, that John Cena's match with Gunther is opening the show. And even if that is something Cena himself requested, I think that is a terrible idea. I mean, unless they have some sort of huge angle, some great angle that they're saving for the end of the show with like Cody and Oba or something like that, I think that is an awful idea. And I hope that does not happen. I really hope that doesn't happen. I mean, how are you going to have a show that is entirely built around this man's final match? And you have to imagine and hope that when the match is over, there'll be a speech. How the hell are you going to build an entire show around that and open the show with it? It can't be. Whatever happens, though, I will be live on YouTube as soon as the show is over on Saturday night. So join me back here on the channel live, and we'll talk about John Cena's final match. Dr. Scorpio, thanks for letting Alonzo walk to the AL East. Oh, you're welcome. Enjoy. Enjoy the polar bear. Oh, we got Retro KOH coming in. Says, did you see David Otunga's attempted expose? He made me cringe when he said Cena must have felt threatened by him. I saw the video he put up, and it was basically, I can believe it happened. I'm not even saying that he's making it up. There are certain incidents that have been shared over the years where Cena just comes off as a total dick. By and large, he doesn't really come off that way, but there are, like, I've shared the JTG story before. I don't think JTG has any reason to make that story up. Cena comes across as a complete dick in that story. And there are times, I'm sure Alex Riley will tell you. So I can believe it happened, but it was basically like, I worked a house show match in late 2010 during the Nexus run. And he was, I think, he might have been partners with Cena, or maybe he was wrestling him. I don't know what it was, but there was a spot and Dustin Rhodes was the agent, and they were planning to do a particular spot. Cena fucked it up, jumping too early, whatever he did, and Cena went off on Otunga. He went off on Otunga. He reamed him even backstage in front of everybody and threatened to go to Vince and get him in trouble and everything, like real like bitch stuff. And the way Otunga tells the story, it's like he was basically a nobody at that point. Cena didn't actually physically like touch him. He was just yelling at him. So he said, oh, there was nothing I can do. I just had to take it. But if he put his hands on me, that would have been the end of John Cena. So that was basically the story. It wasn't like some huge scandal, like some scandalous thing that he did. It's like, okay, he had a terrible experience with John Cena. If I were in his shoes and that happened to me, yeah, I would look at John Cena and go, this guy's a fucking asshole. I'd feel the same way. But I mean, it's hardly going to make national headlines. It's like, okay, dude, like it happened. Deal with it. Oz and Glorious, I've never seen John Cena wrestle, but he comes off as an incredibly disingenuous individual in his interviews. And the Taiwan thing, too. The thing about Cena's interviews, he comes off as so fake, you know? And like, in the Joe Rogan interview, I checked out most of it, because I wanted to see how that compared to the others. And clearly in that interview, there is a switch that gets flipped when he's doing interviews almost anywhere else. He adapts to whatever environment he's in. So in the Joe Rogan interview, it was just F-bombs every other sentence. But he was just more relaxed, and they talked about like a lot of non-wrestling stuff and life shit and stuff like that. And it's like, okay, fine. But then you watch the interview with Bill Simmons, you watch the interview with Tom Rinaldi, you watch the interview with Chris Van Vliet, because Cena's been all over the place, and you get corporate robotic android Cena, where you'll get some interesting nuggets from him, like buried deep within the hour that you talk to him, but a lot of it is just corporate, just fucking nonsense, where he just doesn't really answer the question, or he gives you the most long-winded nothing answer that you could ask for. Well, we hit the goal. We hit the goal. Not the bonus goal, though we're 6 out of 15 on that one. But we did hit the goal, which means that we get one round of Be the Booker, and we have to try to make this the best round of Be the Booker of the entire month. Can we do it? The winter is coming edition of Be the Booker? Let's find out.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
Let us find out how we are going to do in Be the Booker. Hey, Dr. Scorpio, what's going on? Thank you, brother, for the super chat. Should raise the likes for Be the Booker. You want me to raise the likes? I'll raise the likes. You're going to have to work that much harder for it. We'll be doing Be the Booker twice a month. But hey, there's multiple people who want it. We'll raise it to 450 or 500 if that's what you want. All right, tag team Be the Booker. Here we go. We have the Creed Brothers. See, I did what Triple H is afraid to do. I have booked the Creeds. They are now a part of the Be the Booker promotion. We haven't seen very much of them on TV. We haven't seen any of them on TV. And it will be the Creeds against Kenny Omega and Hangman Adam Page. Let the Creeds go, man. Let them loose. I don't mean let them go from the company. I just mean like cut them loose out there in the ring against Kenny and Hangman, and you will have an excellent match. That would be an excellent match. I didn't mean release them. Although maybe they should at this point. The AEW tag team division, man, they would fit right in there. Women's Be the Booker, we have Rowdy, Ronda Rousey. How are we feeling about Ronda Rousey here in this women's main event? Yay, nay? Ronda Rousey against... Hikaru Shida. Someone else we haven't seen on TV in a very long time. Ronda Rousey and Hikaru Shida, though, I think that match would be pretty good. Pretty good. Now our main event. Here we go. Let's crack these knuckles here. Here we go. That's not a great one. All right, here we go. This is it. This is what you wanted. You get one last match here. We have the former, soon to be again, TNA World Heavyweight Champion. There he is with his title, Mike Santana, the former House of Glory World Heavyweight Champion for 554 days. And Mike Santana in the main event. I like it. You should have seen some of the main events he had for us. Some of the best matches I saw all year. Mike Santana, and it is B the Booker is over. After the Wyatt Six massacred the roster. The Wyatt Six have struck again. The biggest heel faction in the entire Be the Booker universe. We get no main event. It is very fitting, isn't it? You work so hard. You work so hard to get this round to Be the Booker, and you don't get no main event. See, that's what you get for waiting so long. That's what happens. All right. I will see you guys back here on Friday night. Winter has come, everybody. See you back here on Friday.